Right, anytime you're ready, Chair.
Thank you. All right, good evening. Welcome to Finance and Governance Committee. Today is June 14th, 2021. My name is Zach Edan. My committee members are Cynthia De Las Tunas Johnson and Kathy Hogarty. I see a staff. Are there other folks that are not staff or online right now? I hear none.
Yeah.
So we'll proceed. So before we proceed, I just want to say thank you to both of you for sharing while I was gone. So appreciate that. Thank you. So today we have three agenda items, business agenda items. The first one is 1A, continued discussion on characterization and restoration of services. Vicky, it's a discussion only item. So take it away, please.
Thank you. So Vicky Carlson, Finance Director, good evening. So this is a continuation of a discussion on restoring the service levels that we began back in March. As part of that discussion was kind of three phases. Phase one was utilization of sales tax mitigation funds that were restored by the state legislature a couple of months ago. And phase one tackled some of our immediate needs to the communities, projects that have the most impact to providing quality of life to our community, which address street and parks needs, address some revenue back services by adding staffing to the permit center, because that does generate revenue. Also restored funding for some contractually obligated services through our Teamsters Union, and then also some critical services that needed to be restored. That was phase one. Council gave consensus for that on May 10th. Phase two, which we'll be talking about tonight, is a conversation on how best to utilize the American Rescue Plan Act funds. And then phase three will be talking about when revenues exceed our adopted budget on a consistent and stable basis, on how do we prioritize the service levels that were reduced through the COVID-19 impact in 2020 and into the budget this year. What's that order that we restore services and to what level? So we'll be talking about phase three at a later date. And again, tonight really is to talk about phase two, which is the American Rescue Plan funds. We had provided some details on the American Rescue Plan funds, ARPA funds, in a previous memo. But just to kind of recap, what we know today, there's four buckets of what the ARPA funds can be used for. The first bucket has to do with responding to the public health emergency, respect to COVID or the negative economic impacts. That includes providing assistance to households, small businesses, et cetera. The second bucket is providing premium pay to eligible workers that are performing essential work. The third bucket is a provision for government services to the extent of revenue is reduced because of the pandemic. And then the fourth category is making necessary investments. And the act calls out specifically water, sewer, and broadband infrastructure. So based on what we know today, these are the buckets on what we can use the funding for. We are awaiting final guidance on what these funds can be used for, and we do expect that in mid-July. So at this point, what we're doing is proposing some projects that staff came up with. We wanted to have a conversation with you on the projects that we've come up with, find out what projects you might be interested in adding to, but we're not looking for any council action at this time because, again, we don't have final authority ruling from the federal government. And we also don't have final dollar figures. We were first given an estimate of $4.43 million. And so we don't want to confirm that number until we get final confirmation from the state that that's how much we're going to be receiving. And again, we should receive that information in July as well. And just as a reminder, as we have this conversation on the use of ARPA funds, we do have a council adopted policy that talks about ongoing versus one-time revenues. And because ARPA funds are considered one-time in nature, all of the projects that we have recommended at this phase are one-time in nature, which fits within that policy discussion. On page three, what we've done is we have summarized very high level the different projects that staff has come up with under the different buckets that are allowed for funding. So under the first bucket, the assistance to households, businesses, and responding to impacts for COVID-19, we've come up with increasing human service funding by increasing the cap per household, and also assistance with utility payments that are in arrears for city residents. And that would not be just for city utilities, but also other utilities within the city, so providers, so Seattle City Light, Puget Sound Energy, et cetera. Under assistance for businesses, we've listed increasing grants and support for small businesses because we recognize that small businesses have been impacted significantly by the pandemic. And we've also put the economic development plan, either one option for $150,000 up to $150,000 under this category. And then improving community access to council meetings by updating council chambers. I believe that was a topic of discussion at your retreat, and we do have an agenda item tonight to talk about some of those options. Under the provision for government services that were impacted by the reduction of revenues, we've listed a few there. So the first one is capital investments that were delayed or are deferred. The traffic calming program, you may recall that we used to have a budget of $400,000 a year in our residential street fund for traffic calming. And we did have to eliminate that because of direct impacts of COVID and then other capital needs. And the other option we have listed under there is other service and staffing needs. When the budget was drafted for 21-22, every department took significant budget reductions. So every department has staffing needs, has resource needs. And we'll be talking about that as we get further on what those needs are. But I just want to put that out there. In investments for infrastructure, we also have some information coming on broadband infrastructure, which would focus on students and low-income residences in those high-need areas. And then one-time investments for long-term financial health, that bucket, we've listed the teen and senior investment center investment, which could be funding for planning, design, or land purchases. Also digitizing the permits records so that we can respond to public records better, and then also possibly facility planning to address some of our significant unmet needs. As you may recall, prior to the pandemic, we were actually going to do a facility study on the 6300 building in City Hall, and that was sidetracked because of the pandemic, and also our needs have changed, but we still have significant facilities needs throughout the city. So that's kind of a very high level of all of the different projects that staff has come up with. We have listed some specific information on each one of them below. I think what I'd like to do now is kind of turn it over to the committee for discussion. What we're looking for is thoughts on the projects that we have proposed. Obviously, the projects that you have interest in, we will definitely bring back more information on. And then projects that you would like to see added to the list so we can get a good list of projects that we can come back to really flesh out before we move this to the full council.
All right, thank you. Kathy, do you have comments, questions? And then after that, Cynthia, you can go when Kathy finishes.
Yeah, thank you for this memo. It's got lots of good detail in it. So hopefully my questions are basic. So I'm looking on page two and talking about phase two funding. I'm going to just ask some what's next type questions. So it says in here that the final guidance on approved uses of the funds is expected to be received in July of 2021. And I forgot, it doesn't say when we would actually receive the funding in this memo. I didn't highlight that.
So it doesn't say in the memo. The state will receive the funds 30 days after the plan was signed by Congress. And then the state then has to go through and do a calculation to validate the amount that every non-entitlement city would receive, which is what we are. So it's a calculation based on your population and your budget in relation to all of the other non-entitlement cities. So once they do that calculation, they are under obligation to submit the funds to us. I believe they can ask for a 60-day, I think it's a 60-day extension based on just the hardship of doing all of those calculations. So that's a long answer to your question, but we didn't put it in there. We do expect the funds to be received in the next month or two. And once we receive that, we'll know exactly how much we will be receiving. Again, the initial estimate was $4.43 million. We did receive a notice from the state that it might be a little bit higher than that. But again, until we get the final document in hand with that dollar amount, we don't know exactly how much money we will be receiving.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking when you said all that later, because it's like they've got to do this and they've got to do that. But you still think it's going to be just a couple months. It's good.
Yeah, they're under obligation to get it out pretty quickly. And the way it'll work is we will receive half of it this year, half of it next year. And then it all has to be committed by December 31st, 2024, and then fully spent by the end of 2026. We'll receive final guidance on that. We're expecting that mid-July.
Okay, so that's an important piece of information, too, that we have half of it, and then we get the second half. So
yes.
I am in support of the things that are on this list because we have gone through them. And my next question is, so when is this going to come back to us again then? And will it come to our committee? Because this is information only. So what's next?
My expectation is it will stay at the committee for at least another two rounds probably.
Okay.
Based on the conversation today, additional information that you'd like to see, we'll make sure is added to the next iteration of the memo. If there's projects that you want to see added to it, we'll make sure we can address those in the next memo. My recommendation is we would not move this to the full council until after we receive the final guidance. One piece of guidance that we're still looking for is exactly what the funds can be spent for on. Right now, they've given us these big buckets, and they've given us a complicated calculation we have to do to prove revenue loss. And we need to make sure that any project we come up with actually meets the letters of the law for what projects are allowed under the funding, because we still have to go through an audit. We still have to have all of the documentations to prove what we spent the money on. So it's not just we get the money and get to spend it on however we want. So once we receive that guidance, then we can fine tune the list of projects. And my expectation would move it probably to the full council in early August at the earliest.
Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. First and foremost, I think that as we go through this process, because obviously it's going to be in committee for at least two more rounds, Vicki was saying, is when we make our recommendation, and I don't know if this is a step that should be done by staff or it should be done by us, but I think that what we choose to spend our ARA funds on should be looked at with an equity analysis, sort of like an equity toolkit. I've personally used one before, and I think the group EPIC might have been working on like an equity toolkit, but there's a series of questions that should be asked about any like policy or funding decision that's made that makes sure that we're really centering our community, centering a racial equity lens when we're looking at how these funds are distributed. First, I think that's really important. So that's just like my general comment in terms of all of these requests. In terms of like what my interest in all of these, I'm really interested in increasing the cap per household for just in this, if we're looking at the number one category. One thing that I'll add is for us to include information about the rental assistance pot that King County has, because I know that they have a significant amount of resources given to King County for rental assistance. I know this because I'm on the Joint Recommendations Committee where we get all of that information. I believe Stacy comes to those meetings and is involved as well. But if we could include in future memos the amount of money that King County has specifically for rental assistance. And I know the next question is, well, how do we make sure that our Tukwila residents are getting the money? At the last numbers I saw from the first round of funding, Tukwila, the percent of Tukwila residents receiving the funding was significantly higher than the other jurisdictions. So I don't have concerns around whether or not, or whether they're overlooking Tukwila. I know that they are looking at Tukwila and SeaTac. So I'm pretty confident in King County's efforts in terms of rental assistance. And I think it's important that we take that into consideration. But I do think that increasing the cap per household for our funds is still really important. I do like assistance for utility as well. Keep that on. The assistance to businesses, I know there was a general number, 200,000, that was presented as the amount. That's something I'm comfortable with, but it would be really great to get more information about what types of businesses, because I remember receiving a memo from last year around us providing assistance to childcare providers in Tukwila. Many of them were owned by Black women, and I would really love to see us support those businesses in particular, especially because childcare is something that's very important, very expensive, and I think that that's something that we should focus on, because not only does it help small minority-owned women businesses, but it also supports people who have children who don't have access to childcare. And as a parent, like, the cost of childcare is literally crippling. So if it's just like that compounding hardship in terms of if you don't have a job and I won't even get into that. I'll just say, please look into supporting childcare businesses, particularly those that we supported the last time we gave out support funding. The one question I had was whether we reached out to the court to see whether they have any needs in responding to COVID that might fall into the ARA. And I think those are my general comments.
And I can respond to your question on the court. The court actually did have one project. They were hoping, they actually wanted to receive a grant to buy a scanner for the court. I can't think what it's called, but when you go through security and it goes to the scanner, so it's the x-ray machine for packages and purses and whatnot. And I believe it was like $35,000 roughly to get one of those scanning machines in. They had applied for a grant and they just found out, they were just notified that they did not receive the grant. So the court definitely will be making, has a request for that. I know for sure.
Thank you. And then one last thing, I just realized I'm supportive of the broadband access, because I think that would really help our residents who really don't have access. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Good questions and comments. Just a general question I had was, some of these ones have the dollar amounts on them, some don't. That just kind of confuses me. I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, how much is this of the bucket is allocated where. You know, one example is, if I lean into it, is the rental assistance, you know, just kind of talks about raising the cap, but I don't know how much of the whole bucket goes into that, right? So we've talked about raising that cap, so I don't really pay attention a lot more, but I'm more interested in the overall amount that goes to the bucket. So And I know that's something that'll come forward, but just thought I'd ask that. I want to go into number four, one-time investments. There's still more information needed for that bucket for some sort of clarity. But personally, I don't think the teens and senior center, especially land purchase, should come out of this funding. I think we were clear as where that should come. I think we said something around bonding, and we should focus on that. One project that we've talked about in the past that's in the CIP is doing a soccer turf field around, I believe, it's the school district fields. So I think that's one thing that needs to be looked at and see if that's something that would fall into something that this could be funding. The other thing that I think I just have more general questions as to what is the final number, where is all the pieces kind of go into it, and I think that's something that possibly we might get in the next round when we come back. But that's kind of some of the questions I have. Just some other minor questions I don't want to, I can ask that next time you come around, but that's all I have for now.
Thank you. We can definitely fine-tune the list of projects here. And again, if there's any projects you'd like to see added to it, we're happy to add to the list. And Councilmember John, you did mention the soccer turf, so we can look into that and see what kind of possibility that is. With these other projects, we can definitely fine-tune and put some dollar amounts. Again, we wanted to get your ideas on if you thought these were legitimate projects. We can sharpen our pencils and come back with some more specifics on each of them with the next iteration.
Okay. Cynthia, I see you have your hand raised. Go ahead.
I put a note. You wouldn't be able to see my note on my notes. I also added the soccer field, the turf field. I think that is infrastructure similar to parks, and that people need these spaces to be able to get out because they've been isolated all throughout COVID. And so I know that that's an important thing to our community. And then one thing that I didn't see on here was checking back in with the nonprofits that we provide funding to. I know during our budget, we allocated, we have a number of different nonprofit organizations that Human Resources works with. My question is, I know there are some organizations, there was a organization that served some of our Latino residents that's in South Park that we recently connected with. They're providing rental assistance to people who need to work with them for language access purposes. I know we have great language access, but, they had residents from Tukwila, so checking with them, possibly considering adding new nonprofits to our list. But maybe that's something Stacy could look into is, are there any on our list that have expended all of their funds that could use additional assistance because they're seeing more people who need their services, especially thinking about mental health resources, counseling services for youth.
Thank you. I think that was one of my lists. I think one of the things I was thinking is we have, I think if you look at the language on what you can spend this dollars, nonprofits is mentioned. And I wanted to kind of figure out how do we involve the nonprofits that either we've engaged or we didn't have enough funding that we can engage at this time around ways to fund them. The other one that I did not mention is trying to figure out, like, from the parks, we have youth programs. What sort of activities can we support that we didn't have, that we didn't get to during budget is something that I want to explore. I don't have anything top of my head that I could tell you the type of program, but I'm looking into thinking about youth programs at the community center. I see a hand from Stacey Hanson. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Stacey Hanson, Human Services. And that is great questions, actually, regarding the nonprofits. And just a reminder of how we allocate those funds through the grants that we, our budget that council approves. And we do have nonprofits that we work with that we were not able to allocate their full request. And so with the additional funds council approved as we were in the peak of COVID, we did increase several nonprofits this last year for 2021. And there are some nonprofits that we could look at specifically that are dealing with more either access to services or residents who've been deeply impacted by COVID. And one of them is El Centro de la Raza, and they've been doing some really good work in Tukwila and asked for a nominal amount, and we gave them half of that amount, and that is definitely one of our underserved populations, and we are, have put a significant focus on access. So that is would be a good nonprofit that we could increase, but you've given good information on how we're already contracting with folks who've gone through the vetted process and then looking at increasing that amount so that we're keeping our process transparent and who gets awarded funding versus who doesn't. And I'll also share one other nonprofit that we did increase, and that is the King County Bar Association, and that's the Housing Justice Project, because that, as you know, what's heavy on all of our minds is what happens when the moratorium lifts and we haven't been able to assist every resident for a whole host of reasons. Then the King County Bar Association works at the court level the day of the eviction notice and helps stabilize residents. And so they do an enormous amount of work for the city of Tukwila and always overserve. So that would be another nonprofit that would benefit from an increase to match the actual services they provide to our community that are really critical. But I appreciate just sharing a couple of examples of where we could add additional fundings to our nonprofit partners for certain. And I can think of a couple of our East African serving nonprofits that we work with as well. And of course, the food pantry.
Thank you, Stacey. I do have a follow-up question, but I want to go to Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
Mine isn't a follow-up question, so why don't you go and then I'll ask my general question.
Sure. Okay, cool. One of the questions I have is like, I know you mentioned some of the ones that currently are approved in within our processes, but how about like, you know, looking into ones that are brand new, probably approached and are interested in serving here in Tukwila, if you have network of nonprofits that have approached and are really doing a work serving the residents, that's one area I was kind of curious if it's possibility to engage them.
We build partnerships regardless of funding. So we do have wonderful partnerships with nonprofits. And we would just need to figure out what that process then looks like, because I believe cities end up with additional funding and they don't just continue to fund programs that they have. They invite new partners in for a short period of time, and we would figure out what that process looks like in order to engage partners that we have a relationship with and we know they're serving our residents, but we don't have a contract established with them yet. And I think that's one of those process things that we would just have to figure out.
Okay, thank you. Kathy?
Well, I was going to say that I would suggest that we don't take anything off the table here, but pass all these through. But we're not doing that anyway. So, because I think to allow the full council to take something off the table, we could give a recommendation that it did or didn't. But it seems to be moot. At least at this meeting, that's a moot point. So that was it.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so let's move on to 1B, technology options for council chambers and council committee conference rooms. This is an item we briefly discussed a retreat this weekend. Who is presenting? Joel, is that you?
Yeah, Joel. So this is Joel, Chief Technology Officer. So as a team, we were looking at modernizing the council chambers now that it has a dedicated purpose. As we're researching with different vendors, we have two vendors from Tukwila and Dimensional, the vendor, the audio-visual vendor we're currently using. We found there's a number of different options that we can do, and we wanted to get some guidance from the council as which direction we should be steering towards, because it's kind of wide. We have three options, one ranging at $10,000 to $200,000. So I'll start going through those options and then we can have questions. The first option was minimal investment, $10,000. Just go through all of our equipment to make sure everything's, you know, get as close to within vendor support and not faulty, so we don't get in a position where it breaks. The video board we currently have is about going on 10 years old and is very complicated to use. You may have seen it. It's challenging to use for the training on it takes, you know, like a month, and no one really gets comfortable on it enough because it's not something the team uses every day. So it's very stressful for the team. That's option one. So if we stay with that, you know, we have a little bit of risk to where, you know, it might break and we might make some, there might be human error during a council meeting. The option number two is what a number of other cities are going with, that is automatic tracking of cameras. So that $75,000, it would be that cameras would track automatically based on who is speaking. So it would be three automatic positions, center dios, left dios, and right dios. And then we'd also modernize a lot of the equipment and move it into the back of the room. So remove the back desk with all the servers in the equipment cabinet and move it to where it's out of the area in a different room. The option number three would be modernize all the equipment with equipment from Televic Systems. They are a company that makes purpose-built audiovisual equipment for governing bodies, like they support like the UN, the United Nations. And they also have they're geared towards municipal government. So for that $200,000, it includes like a Televic touchscreen to where all the council members have their own camera where they could read their agendas, they could vote on it. And when they speak, the cameras just, it will look just like it looks now where you have a close up. Whenever someone else speaks, the camera will automatically track to them. It will also have some support for that individuals need hearing assistance, to where there would be an appliance to where someone could listen to the meeting through their smartphone and have it amplified in their ear. So those, in a nutshell, those are the three options. I know they're kind of broad. We kind of want to get your feedback before we went back to your vendors with a tighter set of requirements. The other piece of this was for the Duwamish and Hazelnut to get a nice conference room camera and a nice conference room microphone and speaker, so there would be crisp sound for hybrid meetings. So that was the last component of $4,000 for each room. Are there any questions?
All right, thank you for the presentation. So I wanted for us to talk about first the committee meetings and then go to the chamber. That's all right with you guys. So I'll go Cynthia first. So let's just kind of, if there's any questions or comments on that, please feel free to ask, and then Kathy.
So we're just sticking with the committee rooms first. We're not going to go to the main one. I'm supportive of getting the committee rooms, whatever they need to be able to handle these like virtual hybrid type meetings. So I'm in support of that.
Cool. Thank you. And I think there's a dollar against that. That's like $4,000. Am I correct on that?
Yes, it's $4,000 for a dedicated PC for the rooms and the camera and the nice microphone and speaker.
Okay. Kathy?
Yeah, I think we need to do that because otherwise we're going backwards. So, right. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the I too feel like we should, you know, do that. I'm totally comfortable with that one, committee meeting rooms. Kathy, you want to start the council chambers? There's three options on that. So, you know, go ahead and ask questions or comment which one you think we should do.
Okay. So I would, based on looking through the memo, I would recommend personally that we go with at minimum option number two, and that's to modernize some technology. And I am advocating for number three, and I'll tell you a few reasons why. And that is, one of them is the backstory that when I got on the council in 2008, no one had a phone, and I asked for a phone, and they're like, why do you want a phone? So I got one. And then we shared two computers with one or two computers with all the people. This is 2008, okay? So the technology has not been a priority with the city until about 2012. And we are always playing catch up. And I think it's time to get the facilities modernized. And I'll just say a couple things because you probably might know what they are. Because we need to just get us up to modern standards and not just do it kind of halfway and then realize we need these things. Okay, so I'll give one example. The televax system with the screens. Remember at our retreat when we wanted to talk to somebody who was remote and we're all marching over to the screen to talk to them one by one, you know, literally standing in line. So it just makes sense. That just makes sense to me. It will also help people with audio disabilities and disabilities be able to have access. And really, I think we need to do the whole route in order to make the communication easy for people to go back and forth. If a staff member needs to be at their house and they're looking, it's just going to be better. The last thing that I'll say is that we would need two staff members in the council chamber for the meetings, even with option two. Option three, we're fully automatic. So that could save money, you know, actually.
Yeah.
Is that true? Joel, tell me.
Fair. The second one doesn't really get paid for, you know. So once we get back to the council chambers and I'm not on the call or someone else isn't on the call, it's going to be Will in the back, and he's going to be totally consumed with his hand on the joystick moving cameras around. So if something goes sideways in the meeting, if there's disruption, he probably won't catch on because he's totally consumed.
Is this even which option?
That's with option one, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So, and I'll just say that, okay, second person doesn't get paid. Well, then they have better quality of life. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So my question is, I wanted to start with, like, the staff. And that's, you know, Kathy has mentioned, but I just kind of want to deeper, you mentioned one person not getting paid. I want you to elaborate that. And the general question I have is, where is this coming from? Like, whatever option we choose, this is not something budgeted. What are the thoughts on administration where this will come from?
We were hoping this would come as part of the ARPA fund.
Say that again.
It's part of the bigger package that Vicki mentioned earlier. It's a component of it. I just wanted to get a little direction from council what the appetite was for spending money on it. But we have to do something, I think.
Right. I totally agree. I am in favor of option three. But one of the challenges in option three is increased funding needed. Increased funding needed. I don't know what that means. I just kind of want to, like, you know, what sort of things that we need to upkeep? What does that look like? So I'm making a full informed decision.
I'm sorry. It may have not been clear, Councilmember Udon. If it says increased funding, it means it's more expensive than option two. That's more expensive. Yeah. There might be some additional licensing costs as you introduce more technology, but I don't have all that detail yet.
Okay, yeah. So it just says increased funding needed. So I've, you know, kind of get a ballpark of if that is possible. You're the SME for this type of thing, so if it's not something you can put a ballpark, that's all right. But I'm just, where I say, I just kind of want to make a holistic informed decision of what that looks like. What does it look like 2 years, 3 years of the upkeep of that of this option three? Does that make sense to you?
Yes. Yes, okay. It totally makes sense. So it's going to be $125,000 more than option two, but there will be, as you introduce more technology, there's going to be increased licensing fees for the additional technology. I can bring back, if it's something we want to do, what those license fees would be annually.
Yes. Okay, cool. I think there is a sense of, from what I heard, we do want to go, improving, obviously, on the chamber, council chamber. Both of my colleagues think option two is good. So I think it's good to kind of hone in and zero in on option two. And did you say option three? Okay, cool. So I think Kathy and I said option three. So when you're talking to your vendor, your requirements, I think, should kind of focus on around, I know your recommendation is, the administration recommendation is option two, but I would like to see us go to option three and also Kathy. So however you want to dice that when you come back to us, you know, it'd be great to have a discussion around that. Does that give you enough direction and answer questions you possibly have for us?
Okay.
Kathy, you want to say something?
Cynthia, did you weigh in on this one?
And not yet, but I support option three, and I disagree with Kathy at minimum two, but I'm all for option three and just getting everything up to date. And really, like, really thinking about the people who cannot make it to the council chambers, not just staff, but particularly residents who might just want to tune in on their phone, or they have to take the bus to get to the council meeting, and that's just too much time and effort. I just really think it would help increase access. So if we could improve the experience for those people who choose to tune in online, that would be my preference. And I think that requires us to really choose the best equipment to for our council meeting.
Yeah. Sorry, Cynthia, I probably skipped you. Well, my bad on that. Kathy?
Well, I said at minimum two, but I want to put your mind at ease, Cynthia. I really wanted three. I was just, again, trying to be that negotiator. But you know how that's the art of negotiation is politics. So, and I did want to add something that is just sort of off, but I thought I read it somewhere. It was a big packet here, but I think it was in this packet, or in this extra material. It's something about pinning the council members to the main screen. In fact, it is. It's in accessory materials here. And this is something that I did want to mention about Teams here, just because I saw it in the accessory materials, that I think we've all noticed that when we're on a Teams meeting, sometimes like you'll have somebody who's a visitor and they'll be on the screen and we won't have a council member on the screen. And is there any way we can, they are calling it pinning a person. And I thought, yeah, so that we always have council members. If you read through here, one of them says pinning the screen so that, oh, it's in the one that's for the console, the monitor. Yeah. To pin the people, pin the council members on the screen so you don't have like all these other people that are taking priority. And I sure wish we could do that with Teams as well, because I know we've all had times when we're talking and we're not on the screen. And I'll tell you, from looking at the screen, people that are watching it, a lot of times you'd be surprised who is on that screen. You know, it's just like somebody who is just called in and they're on the screen and you aren't. So is there any way we can have that conversation later, Joel? But what brought it up was that ability to do that with the monitor.
Yeah, so that's one of the current, Microsoft is always improving Teams, and that's on the list. Like when that gets implemented, you know, they're always changing. I can look up on the roadmap when that's going to be, to where someone, the meeting organizer could pin and it applies to everyone. Those types of things are on their improvement roadmap, and there's hundreds of improvements that people request and they get prioritized. I can check to see where that is on the list.
Yeah, you can just get back to me individually, or maybe the committee wants to know, or I can tell them, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm are there any other questions on the subject? Yeah. Joel, did you get what you were?
I got exactly what I was looking for. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. So let's move on to the last item. Laura, I think this is you, right? So.
It is. Thank you.
So go ahead and take it away. I'm putting up my screen.
Thank you, council members. This is, I'm returning to you with some additional information on the topic of considerations for marijuana retail. Is everybody hearing and seeing me okay? I'm seeing some, okay, thanks. This was discussed at committee on May 10th, but because Chair Edan was not in attendance, I want to just quickly go over the highlights for the previous memo, which was a little bit about the background of this topic in Tukwila. Once Initiative 502 passed, the state Liquor and Cannabis Board adopted rules and regulations regarding implementation. And one of the things they decided to do was to decide how many retail licenses every city could have. And they decided that Tukwila would be allotted to retail stores. Licenses were issued for those two stores, and we'll get a little bit more into the licensing process later on. In September 2013, the City Council adopted the zoning for implementation of I-502 and decided that retailers, producers, and processors are permitted in Tukwila in the Tukwila Valley South and the heavy industrial zones. And then, of course, there's the state buffer limitations, which says you can't site locations near certain entities. In 2017, the City Council received two petitions to expand the areas where marijuana retail could be allowed, but denied both. And then in 2019, the Finance Committee looked at this topic again, but decided not to make any changes at that time. The reason why this council or this committee asked to have this come back was to take a refreshed look at potential revenue. And so the chart at the bottom of page 29 shows how much the City of Tukwila has been getting, which is about $23,000 for 2020 and 2019. Because we don't have any retail stores located here, we get just the per capita distribution from the state. So a few different times we've been asked to estimate what Tukwila could receive if the two retail stores were in operation. That's really difficult to do because there's a formula that's based on population and also on marijuana retail sales as a proportion of total statewide retail sales, as well as factoring in the number and population of the cities and counties that either allow or prohibit marijuana. So the revenue is really difficult to predict, but we can look at neighboring cities to see their collections just for an idea. And so the chart on page 30 shows some neighboring cities, the number of stores they have, and then how much they received in 2020. And so the city of Burien is also allowed to have 2 stores. They've got a larger population, and they received about $111,000 from the state last year. So at the May 10th committee meeting, I had several requests for additional information. And so the underlying text in the memo is the preliminary, at least, responses to that information. So I'll just quickly go through them one by one. First, you had asked for kind of refreshed information on the public safety impacts, because that's been a concern over time with different council members and members of the public. And so I reached out to our police department, and they provided an updated list of calls for service by month and call types of note for the retailers and neighboring jurisdictions. And that is in your packet, pages 35 and 36. The next topic was about more detail about the licensing process and social equity. And so I reached out to the State Liquor and Cannabis Board and found out that there is not a waiting list because all of the available licenses were distributed at that time, and there's very little changing after that. There have been situations where cities were granted more licenses, but that was pretty rare, and they didn't go into detail about the circumstances that would allow that. I learned that licensed retailers are required to be open and operational, but licenses can be held without opening if they obtain a title certificate relieving them of that requirement because of a moratorium, ban, or other zoning restriction. So the two licensees in Tukwila are keeping their licenses current because they are talking with the state about they've been unable to open a location in Tukwila. So the state is allowing them to keep that license. That was a question that came out of the committee last time. A little bit about the social equity. I learned that in 2020, the state passed House Bill 2870 that was specifically crafted to provide business opportunities to retail license applicants disproportionately impacted by the enforcement of previous marijuana prohibition laws. The bill created a marijuana social equity program and established a legislative task force. They were supposed to begin meeting last summer, but the pandemic interrupted everything and the work didn't progress. And then this past legislative session that just ended, House Bill 1443 passed that expanded the purpose of the task force and extended the due date of their final report to December 9th, 2022. It also expanded the technical assistance grant program eligibility, and it called for the establishment of a roster of mentors to support and advise social equity licensees and applicants. And in this packet, I included an attachment on page 37 that it's an overview from the Liquor and Cannabis Board about that bill that passed in 2020. It explains a little bit more about the purposes of that legislation. On to the next page, Councilmember Delestrinas Johnson, I think, wanted a little more information about job creation and the benefit to the community as far as jobs. That was a little bit hard to find out. I wasn't able to get the information from either the Liquor and Cannabis Board or the Washington State Department of Licensing, but I did find some information from the Leafly Jobs Report that was statewide, and it said that in 2020, total jobs grew by 524. So that includes not just retail, but processing and producing. Next topic was if the city council hypothetically expanded zoning to allow marijuana retail in the Tukwila Urban Center Regional Center Zone, and somebody was interested in the property at 311 Tukwila Parkway, how would the current buffer requirements apply? So I mapped it out on the GIS system on the county and found that Tukwila Park and the game arcade at Bolero are within 1,000 feet. So that would make it not possible for a retailer to locate there. There is something in the state law that says that local governments can reduce the 1,000-foot buffer to 100 feet around all entities except elementary and secondary schools and public playgrounds. And so if a business was located there and the buffer was reduced from 1,000 to 100, it's possible it would be allowed because no school or playground is located within 100 feet. But we would need a determination from the planning director because Tukwila Park has a playground. The playground itself isn't within that 100 feet, but the park is. So that's a little bit ambiguous. Another thing that was requested at your last meeting was a map of retailers in the cities adjacent to Tukwila. I wasn't able to find something that I could print for you, but I looked at several, and weedmaps.com provided a really easy-to-read interactive interface. And so if you're curious, I recommend checking that out. And then finally, a little more information about the zoning code update process. If the city council decided that it wants to relook at zoning, there would be a process including ordinance development, planning commission review, and public outreach and hearings. So those are my updates. I'm happy to answer any questions. If I can, I may need to reach out to state agencies depending on what you're interested in.
Thank you. You presented very comprehensive, so thank you. Seems like there was like really good questions asked last week. So, Kathy, do you have any comments, questions? I think, you know, for if it would be good to kind of, because we don't want to keep talking about this if we, if you know, based on the information given to you, if you don't, we don't want to just, if there is a minor questions or that could be followed up, that would be great, but we just want to close the loop as to today. So what your comments should be addressing that. So just trying to be efficient. So thank you. Take it away, Kathy.
All right. So to do the zoning code update, which would be probably the only, that would be our logical next step. It is significant work. We have to develop an ordinance, planning commission review, public outreach hearing, and a lot of that has to do with our DCD department, which right now is really trying to get back up to where they were before with permitting and being able to serve the public in that way. So this certainly is not like, if I say let's just close the door on this right now, that doesn't mean that door could not be opened later on. But it just seems like right now during the pandemic and staff that is really running on fumes, as they've said, this isn't the time since those two licenses are already held anyway. So it's not really going to create opportunity. Well, it might create some opportunity for two businesses to locate, but just all this work that has to happen at this time when we're doing a lot of work, doing a lot of catch up, this, I don't think this is the right time. Good questions, but the timing isn't there. So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Kathy. Cynthia?
I tend to agree with Kathy in terms of now is not really the best time to dig into this, given what we know is the next step. You know, there are some questions that I don't necessarily think Laurel needs to work on, but things maybe in preparation for when, because I do think it's what's important for our to also understand is what's going on with those two people, the two businesses that do hold the license. How come they haven't opened a store? They're waiting on something. So probably for us to open up zoning. So it might be good in the interim to have conversations with us, for us to have conversations with them. Before we go further down that route. And also, I'm really interested in what this task force is going to be looking at. And maybe that's a better time for us to open up these discussions again once that task force that's looking at equity opens up again. They will have recommendations probably, and it might be a better time in terms of our what's going on with DCD So I would say, you know, let's put it on hold. It's not pressing. The issues are going to remain here. But for now, we can sort of close this door.
All right. Thank you so much. I just have a clarifying question. And maybe my question is directed to the finance director, Vicki Carlson. So the current revenues that's mentioned on page 29, where is that budgeted against? I'm just curious on that. Seems like we are getting revenue. And
it is. It's just part of our general fund revenue. So it goes into the general fund and then it gets allocated to different departments to for budgetary purposes. We don't specify that revenue for a specific expenditure. It's just general government revenue.
Got it. The other thing that I learned just reading this memo is the point that Cynthia mentioned. There are already two businesses that hold those certificates, and they have first dip, right? Is that my, like, you know, if we wanted, I think there could be only two businesses in Tukwila, and there's already two businesses that got those licenses, correct?
That's correct. And I learned in my communication with the Liquor and Cannabis Board that they can keep, I mean, they're keeping the licenses going and active. They're fulfilling the requirements of those licenses. So they're, right now it's indefinite until they turn it over.
Okay. The other thing that I thought, was very interesting is if when you look at different cities that are neighboring us, how much they're getting compared to what we would be getting and how much we get right now. So that was very interesting to see those numbers. I also echo the same as my committee members. I think there really needs to be a lot more in-depth on this task force to identify. And then I think for us, it's a huge lift to go through this process. So I just want to say thank you to Laura and other staff that have worked with you to provide us this. Really, really appreciate the kind of research and reaching out you did to the state. So thank you so much. I think that's all we have. If there's any other questions or any miscellaneous, let me know. If not, then we are adjourned. What a wonderful meeting we have today. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Zach.
Take care.